Welcome to Arizona Boomer Radio with the Boomer and the Babe. Arizona Boomer Radio gives voice to 1.4 million boomers throughout the Grand Canyon State and beyond. Each show has a different guest and a different topic. We hope you enjoy the relaxed conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now here are the hosts of the show, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Hello and welcome to another episode, I guess we'll call it today, of Arizona Boomer Radio with the Boomer and the Babe. And the Babe's not here. Deborah is off doing her her other assorted duties that she takes care of for us. So it's just me today, and I'm Pete Peters. And invite the listeners to go to BoomerTheBabe.com and see everything else that the Boomer the Babe Incorporated is involved in. And maybe there's something there that we might be able to help you with to help you promote your expertise or to get your message out to thousands and thousands of listeners and readers of our product. So we invite you to do that. Again, that's BoomerAndTheBabe.com. My guest today is going to be a very interesting conversationalist. I'm really looking forward to this show. Her name is Dr. Charlotte Tomino, or Tomino.
That's right.
I got it right. Well, what do you know? And she is an author. She's author of the book called named Awakening the Brain. And on the back cover it says, Awaken Your Brain and Unleash Your Hidden Potential. We're going to discuss such things as how the brain can help you control illness, maybe cure illness, how it can make you be your best self, various things that just by using your brain and using your whole brain, and what are the advantages of learning how to do that, and then, of course, going ahead and doing it. Charlotte, Dr. Tomino, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show.
Well, thank you, Pete. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation, too. We're all on the same focus here and wanting to get into it.
Let's get right into it, and let's start by asking you to give a little of your background to our listeners. Where have you been? What have you been doing prior to your authorship of this book and being on our show? What brought you to these studies?
Well, I'd like to say first that the whole issue of the boomers is a very interesting issue for me. I was born the first month of the first year, the baby boomers, and it's been a very relevant issue as we've all gone through this enormous amount of change that has come from our presence. Initially, I started out back in the 60s doing things a little differently than other boomers. I was a nun. And I spent 3 years in silence in the 60s. So there were a lot of things that went on that I missed. But after I decided to move on into other things, I wanted to go into psychology and actually was most curious about some of the spiritual experiences and the inner world that I had explored, not with drugs, but in silence. And I moved into the field of neuropsychology. Neuropsychology was a brand new field in the 70s, and it was a very hopeful message. The concept of neuroplasticity and your ability to have your brain adapt and grow and change based on what you focus on was very exciting to me. So for the last 30 years or so, I have been a neuropsychologist, and I do brain rehabilitation. So I work with people in their aging process that want to stay sharp, in their young process that want to do well in school, in situations of injury where they want to recover their functions, changing careers and wanting to know what they're good at. There's lots of reasons why people want to know about their brain and do something about it to expand it. So I will never be bored. Everybody's got a brain and they're all different. And so I'm in a fascinating field. And looking forward to this conversation and your thoughts about this for the boomers.
Well, it's, I guess it's kind of along the lines then what you've been studying is the power of positive thinking, maybe some involved in
yes,
there.
Yes, absolutely.
And mind over matter.
Absolutely.
All of those old saws, as they say.
They all have wisdom.
They do, and there's something to be said, I think, by some of your study as regards those old saws.
What we know now is some of the neuroscience and neuropsychological principles of the brain when you choose a positive statement rather than a negative statement, what it actually does to your brain when you focus on the solution instead of focusing on the problem.
Well, you know, I can relate to that firsthand. I mean, sometimes when we're at the office in the house and Deborah's at one desk and I'm at another desk and we're working away doing whatever our respective tasks are, and we have one of the cable stations on in the background about the politics of the day. Eventually, I guess at the point, I just say, turn that doggone thing off. It is just making me depressed, and I can't even think.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm not paying attention to it, but it's still getting in there.
Oh, and absolutely.
It's still causing a reaction. I'll never let those people have that much power over me, but boy, I tell you, if I don't turn it off, they have it, that's for sure.
Well, you know, that kind of a vibrational influence, sound, you don't even have to pay attention to the words, but you can physically feel the negativity, or if it's a positive message, you can actually feel uplifted and say, what was that? Because you're drawn to it, or shut it off, because it's making you uncomfortable. There's a vibrational influence, and I think as we age, we become more sensitive to all of that. We become wiser and achieve an insight and information from lots more sources. We don't actually have to have all the words. We have a feel for the issue, the person, the situation, the group.
And that starts actually prior to birth, doesn't it?
It does. It happens in utero.
Yes, when the child is still in the mother's uterus, the depending on the music you play, the tone of voice, the loudness, the timbre, if you're arguing, whatever it might be, it all affects that child.
It's giving the child a message whether they are entering a safe world where they can be at ease or whether they're entering a dangerous world where they have to be on guard.
And they take that with them, and they don't even know why they have it.
Exactly.
Have your studies started back at that early age, or have your studies been more with the boomer cohort?
Well, I work with children starting in the first grade.
Oh.
Preschool is a very specialized area, and the development varies a fair amount before the first grade level, but I work with kids from the first grade and then up through the life cycle.
Okay. Do you find that at first grade they still have there's a whole lot of learning to do, a whole lot of things that can still affect them, or is some of their path already pre-chosen or predetermined based on the way they were brought up prior to first grade?
Well, the good news about that is that neuroplasticity allows us to change the orientation of our nervous system based on repeated experience. So whether you've had traumatic experiences and you have a startle response and a defensive response and a fear response in the first grade or when you're 80, you can always adjust that. You can change that. This is the power of neuroplasticity in the brain, where we have this adaptability that can either work for us or against us. We can expose ourselves to traumatic situations or scary movies or abusive relationships or whatever it may be, but we can also get out of that, soothe ourselves, and trust again.
Okay, so you've used the term neuroplasticity on several references already in this short time we've been on the air. Could you explain to our listeners exactly what is neuroplasticity so we can use that term with abandon and know that they
Sure. The brain adjusts to what it's experiencing. So let me give you an example that all of us will recognize about neuroplasticity. There was once a day when you didn't know how to drive a car, right?
Right.
And so when you first got behind the driver's seat, you weren't quite sure where to put your feet, your hands, your eyes, which you should be looking at, you know, what you should be doing. You were trying to consciously figure out the next step, when to look behind you, when to look to the side. And over time, with just practice getting used to it, your brain adapted and actually developed what we call a neural network that enables your eyes and your feet and your hands to talk to each other automatically. Now you can drive down the road having a conversation, listening to Boomer and the Babe on the radio, and your foot is on the brake before you even realize it needs to be there, because neuroplasticity has transformed you from being a passenger to being a driver. You have an automatic response that has adapted and has become who you are. This is this adaptability in the brain that allows an athlete to go to the Olympics, or a musician to play an instrument, or for me to learn how to type so I could write this book in my 60s.
So neuroplasticity, it sounds to me as though adaptability is also kind of a word that we could use there. Is that correct?
Yes,
So if neuroplasticity, plasticity is interrupted by a stroke, head trauma, whatever the case might be.
Sure.
Any kind of trauma to the brain, does neuroplasticity rebound? Will it?
Absolutely.
Back?
Absolutely. Okay. If you've had a stroke and you can't speak and you go to the speech therapist and they are engaging those muscles in your throat and your mouth and your tongue, you're emitting sounds again, you're forming those sounds, you're producing those words. It's neuroplasticity that is enabling the brain to respond to her direction, respond to those repetitive movements of those muscles, and get those words out again. And you see somebody in the hospital who can't speak, and you run into them 6 months, a year later, and they're talking to you. That's neuroplasticity, adapting.
Is that what they mean by the brain will rewire itself?
Yes, it is. Neuroplasticity is how the brain will rewire itself. You have to engage it in repetitive effort, and it starts taking over and doing it.
So
it's like
a
muscle that gets stronger every time you pump.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then that's what they're doing when they're, for instance, if they're using music, because I'm not totally familiar with, only in news reports, but Gabrielle Giffords, who was shot in the head here a little over a year ago here down in Tucson, and she's making this comeback, and music played an interesting role in her progress.
Absolutely.
And so they found that that was something that they were going to be, so they're working with her then to redevelop this neuroplasticity is what we're talking about.
Exactly, yep.
Okay.
She's making a great recovery. It sometimes can be slow in some areas, but the point is, if you keep going, it will keep going. And this is one of the reasons why I think belief is at the heart of our potential. A person who doesn't believe in this sits down, feels depressed, gives up, and doesn't make the effort that will access the neuroplasticity, that will exercise those pathways and make them strong. If you believe, you can do it.
Well, I think that's what we said, or what I said early on. It's mind over matter, power of positive thinking. You've got to be willing to believe that you can do it. You have to accept the fact that it's going to take time and work, and then get to it.
That's it exactly.
Now, what various things can this belief and the power of the brain? First, let me ask you this. What does it mean to awaken the brain? I mean, is it the case where I've just been living a life of sedentary existence and not challenging my brain, not playing instruments, not trying to learn new languages and so on and so forth? Do you awaken the brain from that, or are you talking about awakening the brain from trauma?
Well, I'm using it fairly broadly because I think that when we are aware of neuroplasticity, aware of our potential to keep going and to keep expanding our skills, that's when we're awake to developing what we want. And I don't know about you, Pete, but when I'm 66 years old, when I was a kid, people my age were done. They were on the porch. They weren't doing anything, sometimes the garden. But that was kind of the end of the road. And now I'm starting a brand new business and writing a book and learning how to type on a computer and doing all kinds of brand new things. So when you're awake to your own potential and you repetitively stick with it and don't get discouraged, you have these breakthroughs that develop new skills that you never had, and that never ends. We didn't know that when I was a kid. Older adults didn't even try. And now we know that if I just repeatedly keep typing, eventually my fingers will hit the right key, not the wrong key, and now they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been typing for years, and I'm still hitting the wrong keys. but I understand what you're saying. And so then that's a day-to-day existence, day-to-day activity. Mm-hmm. Are you finding that baby boomers are concerned with this now more than they used to be?
Oh, absolutely.
What have you found, and what is your evidence of that?
Well, I get a lot of people coming to my office to mm-hmm. say, I'm worried I have Alzheimer's. Now, most people don't quite know what that word means, but it's going around really hot. Mm-hmm. And I listen to them and ask them, why are they concerned? Well, I'm having trouble thinking of the names of things that I used to have on the tip of my tongue. And I used to be able to do things quickly, and now I do them slowly. You know, there's a natural change with aging that is not a disease process. If you're going to use your whole brain and you're going to stop and think what happened back in your 40s and how did this turn out and how is that different from the situation now and consider this from a position of wisdom, it takes a little more time. I have a very different view of what a senior moment is. A senior moment is taking the time to use your whole brain.
There you go. So when somebody says, I'm having a senior moment, you're just saying, just relax a minute. I'm going to run it through the whole mental univac and develop my thought based on that.
Yeah, because it's not just a quick off the top of the head answer anymore. As we age, we know the implications of those quick answers, and it takes time to think them through and to deliver them in a way that we know can be effective. Mm-hmm. Young people might come up with the right answer. They don't know what it means.
That's different. I say that, well, they've got all the answers. They just don't know the question.
Yes, exactly. That's good, yes.
It's kind of, I'm likening what you're saying to so many things that we've talked about and had discussions with other people and talked to some of our clients about. And that is, as an example, Twitter is out there. It's 140 characters. And you can just sit down and bang off a Twitter feed, a tweet, in just absolutely no time whatsoever, punch it, and it's gone, and everybody that you're connected to can read it. And then you look back and you say, oh, my gosh, what did I write?
Why did I do that? Yeah.
Exactly. And because you didn't think it through. And what mm-hmm. we're saying, I think, in the line of today's activities, I always say that you can ruin your brand, in other words, your personal brand or your business brand, with 140 poorly chosen characters.
Ooh.
And you can also ruin your brand by not stopping and thinking what you say. So sort of engage your brain before you put your mouth in gear.
Exactly.
Take
the time to go from step one, the immediate response, to two, who am I delivering it to three, what impact will it have, and four, what impact do I want to have? Mm-hmm. And if you just take four steps like that, you might change your whole message.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about focus.
Mm-hmm.
So many times, I might be sitting here at my computer and typing something, and all of a sudden something else will pop up or the phone will ring or whatever, and I'll get back to where I was, and I have problems focusing or refocusing on what I was doing. How does focus and being able to focus fit into all this?
Oh, that's a great question, Pete. There are a number of different kinds of attention, it turns out. Your ability to focus on this conversation is different than your ability to alternate your attention from saying, excuse me, we're going to go to some kind of other announcement, and then pick up the thread when we come back. So that's called alternating attention, where you can alternate, hold on to where you left off in the conversation, order your dinner when the waiter comes, and then go back to your conversation.
And we're going to be able to test that on the show today because I'm going to have to stop. We'll come back to the conversation. So we're going to test that right there.
Okay. And then I'll tell you the other parts of attention.
Oh, we're not doing it yet.
Okay.
Go ahead. Go on with the other parts of attention.
Oh, okay. Good, good. Okay, I can keep going. So then we also have what's called divided attention. Now, have you ever been at a cocktail party or someplace where there's a crowd and you're talking to somebody and you hear a conversation going on behind you and somebody mentions your name or something that's relevant to you and you don't want to be rude to the person you're talking to, but your brain is actually following both conversations?
Yes.
Yeah. We have the ability to divide our attention as well. And this is the part of our functioning. These are all functions of the frontal lobe of the brain, and this is where multitasking starts coming in, where we're doing multiple things at the same time. It's a little overrated in that you're really cutting down on your amount of presence to either conversation. You're cutting down on your ability to actually take in and understand the implications of and be present to and respond to either of those, right? So multitasking is kind of diminishing your presence and effectiveness based on the number of things that you're doing.
It's like a set of stereo speakers. You either listen to the right side or the left side, or you can move it in the middle and try to get the full sound of both.
Yeah, but if you're in the kitchen, you're cooking, you're answering the phone, you're talking to the person that just came in, you've got the radio on, how present are you to any of them, and is dinner going to burn?
You know, doctor, I wrote that blog. I have written that blog, and the title of the blog, there is no such thing as multitasking.
Oh, good.
That you cannot, I don't believe you can truly multitask as it is designed to be used in the computer term, because that's where it started, I believe, is computers can multitask. And in reality, they can't either. I mean, it's just happened so fast that it seems to be multitasking. But if I'm talking to you and the phone rings and I answer the phone, somebody is going to get short shrifted here. It's
exactly.
Either going to be my conversation with you or the conversation with the person on the phone. And if I've dedicated a half hour to conversation with you, and I know that this conversation with this person on the phone is going to take a half hour, who am I to think that I'm going to be able to take those 2 half hours, put them together, and make the whole thing take only 45 minutes?
Doesn't make any sense.
That's simple math.
Yeah. But, Pete, let's think about that from the perspective of you trying to do both things, have multiple people in your office or however, whatever circumstance you're in. You're splitting your energies. You're splitting your focus, and you are increasing your stress level, which is not good for you.
Right, right.
There's a tension that builds up from that when you're divided in that way.
And not only am I not doing any service to myself, I'm not doing any service to the people that I'm trying to communicate with. Either one of them. They're both getting less than my best.
Yeah. I really like what I do because I talk to one person at a time in a session, and they get my full undivided attention. The door is closed, and I am not interrupted. But when I'm doing a presentation and there's a number of people there afterwards and several people are talking, there's a lack of satisfaction from the depth of connection that you just can't have when you do multitasking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's that very reason is that you gave, that what you like about being one-on-one with people is why we generally do one-on-one with our guests on the show. Now, you may have a partner that's involved in this with you, and there may be the two of you, but the topic is still one topic.
Yeah, exactly.
And for that reason, we don't take callers, because it will inevitably change the flow of the direction and maybe have us go back to where that caller called in originally. I want to talk about that. Now we've got to regroup, go back, and we've lost whatever natural flow that we've got going.
Exactly.
Well, the natural flow right now is this is where we're going to do our little commercial breaks.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're going to test your theory about having the alternating attention. How's that?
There you go. You got it.
We'll be right back after these
okay.
2 minutes.
Boomer the Babe are the publishers of Boomer Series books. Our authors have their own shows on the Boomer the Babe Network. We encourage you to listen. Ron Naraki, author of the forthcoming book, The 10 Commandments of Investing, is the host of Wealth DNA, a financial show about real estate investment. Learn how to build and manage your portfolio. Ron hosts the show, and he always has good information to pass along, as do his guests. Listen to Wealth DNA on the second and fourth Monday of the month at 8 a.m. Arizona time. Tom Liggering's another Boomer Series author. His book, Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours, is the basis of the show he does with his broadcast partner, Dr. Terry Munther. Listen to Success or Failure with Tom and Terry on the fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 a.m. Arizona time. Learn how you can maximize your performance in business and in life. The methods you employ can either help or hinder. The choice is yours. The Boomer and the Babe are proud to be affiliated with Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. Valley View is now serving Phoenix from their new 36,000 square foot location at West Peoria and 107th Avenue in Sun City, Arizona. The new location houses the food bank, Feeding Arizona, and the Valley View Thrift Store. Feeding Arizona delivers food to other food banks and food pantries that are in need. If you're looking for a 501c3 to support, go to valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. All donations are welcome, be it food, money, or volunteer hours. No donation is too small. Get a hold of Jesse Ramirez, founder and director, and say, "I want to help." Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free.
And we are back. This is the Arizona Boomer Show with the Boomer and the Bay, Pete Peters, Deborah Brown. Deborah's not here, so it's just Pete today, and we're having a very wonderful conversation with Dr. Charlotte A. Tomeno, Ph.D., talking about her book and her studies, Awakening the Brain. I had to think when we were playing those commercials that I hope we can get back and prove your alternate attention.
Well, prove that it actually works.
There you go.
Well, we left off talking about all the kinds of attention.
There you go. Exactly.
Focused attention and sustaining it, alternating attention and remembering where you left off, and divided attention, doing multitasking, more than one thing at a time.
Right, and we kind of left off with multitasking, I think, is what the last thing that we touched on.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that you have some thoughts with regard to how the brain can recognize what's going on in our bodies and what our bodies are telling us. Let's kind of get into that aspect of what you do.
Sure.
What is the brain-body compass?
That's a concept that I'm using in the book to help people read the wisdom of their body. We often physically feel what's going on before it happens. We often can walk into a room and feel elated and not sure why it feels so good, or feel like we want to get out of there and not sure why we want to get out of there. There is a sensory processing in the body that happens often first. The sensory gut sense really happens before you hear it or before you see it. And so this is important information to listen to, and it's very important information to listen to for health, because we know when we feel fatigued, we know when we feel off, we know when our digestion isn't quite right, or our heart is racing. But it takes the brain to figure out, what is that really telling me? Is this about my environment I'm in, or is this about my inner environment of my body's health? And so the brain reading the compass of the body is a very specific skill, a very specific language, I think, that guides us, gives us information about how to function in the world. There's a whole lot of people that are street smart, and I think that's what this is. They have a gut sense of what's going on. And there's people who know how to adjust their diet or their sleep, or it's time for vacation, you know, or hydration, or whatever it may be, because their body is telling them something.
And an example of that would be the gentleman's headstone that said, "See, I told you I was sick." he had recognized that something was wrong.
There you go.
That
was good.
What tips can you give us that will help manage the brain when you're feeling stressed or overwhelmed, or maybe some of these other feelings that's going on in your body are what you think might be causing your stress and your overwhelm? What can you give as far as a tip to help operate this system?
Sure. Well, I think one of the most important things is to realize there are very specific signs in your body that tell you when your stress level is reaching a level that's not good for you. And usually what happens is your heart starts to race, your thoughts start to get negative, hypervigilant, or you get those repetitive thoughts, you know, that one of those ones that just play in your head over and over again. Mm-hmm. And often your muscles get tense. So there are specific signs like that in the body for what we call hyperarousal. You know what the fight and flight response is, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, that's what hyperarousal is, when you've got this defensive emergency sort of energy in you. And that is really a state in the nervous system that is automatic and is there to protect us, but it's not good for us to stay there for very long. It creates a chemistry of stress hormones and adrenaline and cortisol, things that are really not good for your organs and in the long run can make you sick. So if you're feeling any of that because somebody drove by and cut you off, or somebody's blowing the horn and startled you, the first thing to do is to change your focus. Instead of letting that pull you into more of it, recognize that you've just landed in a situation that you don't want to be in. The second thing to do is focus on the fact that you want to relax and just start breathing. Because if you're breathing rhythmically and evenly, your heart will just slow down and follow the pace of your lungs. And the third thing is to just relax your muscles. Let your shoulders come down from around your ears back to where they belong. And immediately you start feeling some ease and you can think more clearly. You move into a chemistry that's healthier for you and where you will think, feel, and behave more productively.
Now, all of these tips that you just gave us, are they easier to get to as we get older or less findable? I'm scrapping for a word here. But, I mean,
yeah.
Is it easier to find them or harder to find them as we get older? How does everything change?
Well, you know, that's interesting. It depends less on age and more on how long you've practiced the habit of being reactive. And often as we age, we mellow. Often as we age, we get wiser. Often as we age, we recognize what's coming and we do something about it before we even get involved in it. But if we are in a situation where we're in the fight and flight response and something has really impacted us, I think the realization that there is a physiology here that I can control, and this is what I mean about being awake to your brain, the power of your brain, and just knowing to take a deep breath. Most of us had our parents telling us to count to 10 before we opened our mouths, and that was really wise because what you say at 10 is very different than what you would say at 1.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of wisdom we can call on. So I find older people, unless they've practiced this negativity and are identified with it as being a fighter in some way and just unwilling to shift, older people get the wisdom of this, understand the power of it, and take to it much more readily and find themselves much more comfortable and healthier because they're staying calmer.
And when you're staying calmer, you have you're creating some space for yourself,
mm-hmm,
to react, I would imagine.
And you react in a more sophisticated way because you can think. All of us have had that moment where something came out of our mouth and we said, what was I thinking?
Exactly.
And the point is you can't think. It grabs you and something just, a reaction comes flying out.
Right.
So when you can breathe and not let it grab you, then you can think and be effective.
We ought to teach that to some politicians.
I like it. Yeah, sounds like a good idea to me.
Another term that you've used repeatedly throughout our conversation today has been wisdom.
Mm.
Is wisdom a byproduct of all of this? Is wisdom a byproduct of aging? Do younger generations, are they capable of wisdom? How does all that fit in?
Well, I think wisdom is dependent on life experience. I think young people can have that. You see these kids who've gone through cancer, and they're very different than their peers. They know the value of life. They have a kindness. They do stop and think. But I think it's because of life experience, and mostly it's as we age and have had a lot of life experience that we do stop and think and weigh our words and want to contribute more than react. I think wisdom is calling on that vastness of life experience. In psychology now, we're calling it developmental intelligence. We've got a whole new way of thinking about it, and it's that ability to use your whole brain and remember the time and hone the insight that you learned and apply it specifically for this situation that really is the value. And I think that's the contribution that the baby boomers have yet to make. I don't think, I'm the first year of the baby boomers, I'm 66. We're just moving into our wisdom years where we are able to apply what we've learned and contribute, not by fighting back. There was a lot of fighting back in the early years to change things. I think we want to do this, make our contribution smart instead of working hard, and use our wisdom now to contribute to younger people and guide them.
Do you think that the developmental intelligence, at what point do you, or can you quantify, what point does it really start to gather up so that you can say, aha? I mean, there's the adage that, you know, the older I get, the smarter my parents were.
I like that. I haven't heard that.
I'm sure that's the case. I know I've probably said it reluctantly. It's something you say or think grudgingly. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Shoot, Dad was right. My gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's always nice when your daughter comes to you, which happened in our case. She says to Deborah and I, she says, you know, you guys were very, very smart not to buy me a car in high school. I'd have been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of wisdom on her part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The fact that we decided to do it was hopefully based on wisdom on our part.
Mm-hmm.
But does that wisdom continue to grow, or does it reach a point that says, well, I just can't be any wiser than I am today?
Never, never. I think as long as you keep paying attention to what's going on and you take the time to reflect on it and you actually form a reaction, a response, an opinion, a contribution, as long as you take the time to go through that process, bringing forth your unique contribution. You know, there's no two brains that are the same. Mm-hmm. No two siblings, even in the same household, are the same. Your unique life experience is the contribution only you have to offer. And when we take the time to do that and really reflect, really consider the possible outcomes and pick the best one and know why. And that takes some thinking. That takes some mulling over the possibilities and the position that you would want to take. And then offering it in a way that it can be received. Not trying to cram it down anybody's throat and not really getting into an argument about it, right? Because when you argue about it, it actually triggers the person's defensiveness rather than openness.
Right.
So real wisdom is delivered with kindness and is engaging, and people want to think about it with you. It's a very specific skill that we see in leaders where people walk away inspired. There's a sense of self-assured confidence and an ability to explain things and be kind about it and compassionate about it and offer something that's useful and helpful. And people walk away enhanced after that. And I think the boomers are just moving into our biggest contribution, actually. I think that's going to be it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And my only question at this point as regards to boomers, and I think I've mentioned this before we went on air, is whether or not they have the stomach for it. I mean, before you, as it was in the past, you said that what the boomers did is they tried to force the issue. They just went ahead and just tried to plow through it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now they have the wisdom, but the answer that we're still looking for in my particular thought is, do we have the courage and the stomach to do it anymore?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do we have the desire to do it anymore?
Yeah.
I
think
that,
that's a really good question, Pete, and I think that when we take the time to reflect on what we are curious about, what we're drawn to, what in our heart of hearts we care about, where we feel we can make a contribution and it will be better, then it won't require any stomach. It's not effortful. It's calling us. I think we are in the position to move into a very different stance. Back in the 60s, we had our cities burning down. We had our sit-ins in our schools. We had all of our tensions and conflicts. I think we can go to the opposite end of that stick and, with patience and kindness, learn how to offer what we learned from all of that in a way to do it better.
Do you think, and I'm not asking you for a political statement, but do you think that with everything that's going on today and the massive arguments that you hear, do you think at some level we haven't progressed from the 60s and 70s?
No, I think we've progressed. I think we've learned a lot. I think tension is the basis for growth. I don't think we'll ever be without it. And I think there will always be a new horizon to see something better and think we should move into it. And those that disagree, I think that will always be with us. I think it's the nature of the human condition and it's how we grow and expand. It's evolution. You know, it's the pearl starts out as the piece of sand in the oyster and irritates it so much it becomes
right.
A pearl. Yeah.
That's true. Do you attribute, I know that when you did your bio at the beginning of the show, do you attribute the fact that you were a practicing nun and you were silent for 2 years? Is that where this all started? Or
mm-hmm.
or did you come out of your stage of silence and say, aha, this is what I'm going to do? Or did that develop over time like developmental intelligence?
That's interesting. I think I was born a kind of reflective person and very, very drawn to the inner world. And back in the fifth grade, I read the Mary Noel magazine and I saw these pictures of these nuns in Africa. And there was something about that so inspired me to want to belong to something so much bigger than myself that could ease suffering and contribute to people. And as I grew, that feeling, you know, the brain-body compass idea, that feeling always stayed with me, and I've always followed it because it's always been satisfying. So I felt that way about going into the convent, and I felt that way about neuropsychology. And I feel that same way about writing this book so that people anywhere who are interested in expanding their brain function, understanding how to take charge in this world that we are being bombarded by, and our inner world is just getting flooded right now with our technology, that they can take charge. We have the information now. We want to have neuroscience and neuropsychology be useful and relevant. So I feel the same kind of inspiration about this that I felt about that. But what I learned in those years in silence has to do with the power of the inner world and how to stay grounded there. And we don't have much opportunity for that in the world we're creating now. With the technology we have, things are going so fast that it's very hard to take the time to take a deep breath and just look at the sky, you know, smell the roses. It's all coming at us no matter where we are, and we have to consciously take charge of it and make choices about it in order to have inner peace. I'm really glad I was a nun before I was a doctor, because that's given me insight into how to just get to a peaceful place without drugs, without all of these kinds of bombarding solutions that we have right now. I don't really want to go there. I'd rather go and meditate or go visit my friends in the convent and pray with them, or take a walk in the woods and ground myself in nature and come back renewed, refreshed, and able to think broadly again.
So you do have your escape mechanisms?
My renewal mechanism.
Oh, renewal. Okay. Much better word, obviously. I have a friend of mine that says, leave me alone, I'm going to my happy place.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're talking about, is going to your happy place, a place where things are calm and peaceful.
Yeah.
Do you think that as boomers go beyond, there'll always be baby boomers. I mean, that's one thing about it. They'd say, aren't you too old to be a baby boomer? Well, no, if I was born between this and this, I'm still a baby boomer.
Right.
But as they age, do you think the desire will, once we get the desire, we've talked about whether or not they had the desire. You say you think we're just developing the desire to change and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's something that stays with you? Or at what point do you just say, now I am going to retire and I am going to play golf three times a week?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think our world and our economy is not giving a lot of people that choice. And
that's right.
I'm not sure that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people who don't find themselves purposefully involved and feeling that upliftment from having contributed and been purposeful, you know, don't do as well. And I'm not saying that the problems in the economy is something I wanted, but what I'm noticing is that people who are staying active and for some reason, like the economy, have to, are actually finding parts of themselves that they never would have, finding resources within themselves, contributing in ways that they never would have. And I said at the beginning, when I was a kid, people my age were done. And they were kind of slipping away because they weren't really doing anything. And that's how the brain and the body works. It's all use it or lose it. And we've got a lot of reasons to use it, and we're finding out what's possible of, you know, really moving those limits and being able to engage in our later years in a way other generations haven't.
You have to challenge yourself.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Set new and higher objectives and challenge yourself.
Find something you truly want,
sure.
You truly care about, you truly would like to know, that you're truly curious about and interested in, and it enlivens you. and it may have nothing to do with what you did before.
Right. You're going to have to look at it and see what it is now that moves your soul, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. That is your aliveness. That's why I talk about the spirit-brain-body connection, because our brains can get captured by CNN, and we're sitting comfortably at home and freaking out. You know, what's that all about? Your spirit and your ability to reflect and think and choose actually manages your brain, actually manages the balance of chemistry in your body that keeps you well.
Right. Well, I'm just looking at the clock on the wall here, Doctor, and it's not telling me a good thing. It's telling me we're down to the short rows. This has been a phenomenal time that we've spent together. Why don't we take this moment and for you to give what I call your shameless self-promotion. tell everybody about how they can get hold of you, what any of your activities are that they might be interested in, if you do things online, where they can buy your book, how they can get in touch with you directly if you do that type of thing. Just start and begin whenever you're ready and finish when you're done. How's that?
Okay, great. Well, what I can say is that I'm a practicing neuropsychology in White Plains, New York, and we do all kinds of work with people in the New York geographical area. But because not everybody is physically near us, I also have a website through which I do consultations for people that are interested in knowing more about their own personal cognitive style and how to take advantage of neuroplasticity and all of these things we've learned. So you can go to my website, awakeningthebrain.com, and there's actually lots of information there. There's information about all of the presentations that I'm doing and radio shows and TV. There's information there to sign up for a consultation that I can do by phone. There's information there about how to find these kinds of resources in your own community. So there's also a blog, so if you have questions about things that you're looking for other people that are exploring, we're trying to open up a conversation for all of the innovative things that are going on as well. My book, AwakeningTheBrain.com, and the subtitle, I'm sorry, my book, Awakening the Brain, the subtitle is The Neuropsychology of Grace. And so I'm interested in how we access this higher power that we have available to us, this spirit essence that we are. And people who are interested in those kinds of things, managing your brain and accessing this type of strength that we have within us, I've been told it's a good read. I've been living it, so I like it. And it's available at all of the bookstores. You can get it at Amazon, and you can order it through my website. So it's generally available, and I'm interested in feedback from people if they want to come to my website and give me feedback about it. I've only been doing this for a few months, so I'm just learning about a lot of the ways that this information gets passed on, and I'm interested in this phase of my life offering what I've learned in my developmental intelligence to the people that can take it to another level.
Well, very good. You're a very amazing person, and I'm really pleased that you were a guest on the show. And
well, thank you.
I guess it's safe to say that we boomers, whether we think we have it or not, we probably all have some level of developmental intelligence.
Mm-hmm. We all do. And all we got to do is take a minute and access it in our own thoughts, our own reflections. We know a whole lot more than we realize.
So I can say to my daughter, I love you dearly, my sweet daughter, but I still have more developmental intelligence than you.
You've got it.
Oh, very good, very good. I'm going to give you a shout right after this program goes off, if that's okay.
Sure.
Couple other things I wanted to mention to you, and
absolutely.
I want to thank you once again for being our guest today. And
thank you for having me, Pete.
And we're going to wrap this up, and I'll be talking to you very shortly.
Okay, bye bye.
Thank you very much. We've been talking to Charlotte Tomeno, PhD, author of Awakening the Brain, and if if you are just listening to this live, tell your friends to go and listen to it on the archives, because it's well worth the listen. This lady is one wonderful woman and tells you a bunch of stuff that you may or may not have known, but if you didn't know it and it didn't understand it, you'll be able to understand it now. So I want to thank her again for being on the show. And this is the Boomer and the Babe on Arizona Boomer Radio, and we're going to be back again tomorrow with some more great, another great guest and more great guests throughout the week. Tomorrow is Thursday, and we have Arizona author C.L. Gilmore on the show with us tomorrow. Deborah is going to be here for that one. I guarantee it, because that was the promise that I made for her. I made her give me, I should say, that she was going to be here with C.L. Gilmore. So we're looking forward to that. So have a great day, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon or morning, wherever you might be. And we look forward to you joining us again tomorrow with author C.L. Gilmore and Deborah Brown. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Arizona Boomer Radio with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Arizona Boomer Radio is produced by the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated and can be heard Monday through Friday. You can sign up for their online magazine at boomerandthebabe.com. To reach the Boomer and the Babe, email host@boomerandthebabe.com or friend them on facebook.com/boomerandbabe. And on Blog Talk, you can friend them at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Follow their tweets at twitter.com/boomerandbabe. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And remember, at 50, you're just getting started.